Representatives of the school will be here tomorrow, and we'll have one of the tables in the World Cafe. So if you're interested to find out more about the school and to talk with them, then that's you're welcome to do so. So now we have the opportunity to have more of a conversation, and we're going to have the podium discussion on inclusive schooling in Europe, where we can grapple with some of the questions that we have in the project that we have trying to address. So I welcome the members of the different project teams to the podium. And we will have a bit of question and answer on the podium, and then open up the plenary for your questions also. So it gives me great pleasure to welcome, on my right, all the way to my right, Stefania Ališauskaitė from the Šiaulių University in Lithuania. Gerardo Ešaita, Professor Hafdís Guðjónsdóttir from the University of Iceland. Kerstin Merz-Atalik from University of Education Ludwigsburg, Bengt Pedersen from University of Borås in Sweden. So we have a number of questions about inclusive education that we've been discussing over the last day and a half. And I thought it would be nice to begin this round with just a brief answer on what is the status quo of inclusive education in your country, and so what is the status, if you can give a short insight into also maybe the challenge of inclusion in your country. So, and feel free to, anyone can start.
Should I start? I think in Sweden we have to go back actually to as far as to the 40s after the war, when Sweden didn't suffer from the war, could build very fast welfare state, which meant that as early as 1960 we could establish and make a law for a comprehensive school for all. A 9-year comprehensive school, compulsory school for all. And this was among the first countries in all Europe which had this opportunity to do so. And with this revolutionary, I would say, development in our country, special institutions were closed down, and pupils who have earlier been in these schools and classes came into the compulsory school system, which meant that a new professional group established, namely the special teachers. It was impossible for teachers to work with all this diversity, so they needed support. And they needed support, but it was said that the pupils needed support. So special education became the facilitator for the compulsory school system, at the same time as this was the start for inclusive schooling in our country. A reaction came in the 1980s against this, and this meant that the special education professionals became more of consultants than special teachers. Today, I will say that the debate on inclusive education in our country is not very strong. In a way, we seem to be laid back. We are quite satisfied, it seems, with the situation, which we shouldn't be. there are tensions in our system. For the last 10 years, we have got a very market-driven system building on competition, freedom of choice, ranking, and accountability. So this happens at the same time as inclusion has raised in one way, but results have decreased concerning PISA, for example. So we have inclusive systems, but under pressure, I will say, from different ways.
Thank you.
You can probably imagine how difficult it is after his presentation to sit here as a German to represent my country. But probably this is also an answer why we were the coordinator of this project, because we really wanted the exchange with other countries and their systems. And actually, as Justin already showed in his presentation, segregation is not only a fact for children with special needs in Germany, because in our school system, children, almost all of the children, are segregated into diverse tracks in the system. And this is a very long tradition. And when Bengt Persson says that when your development in Sweden has started, we also had in the 60s a big debate about developing comprehensive schools in Germany. And actually some of the states, the Bundesländer in Germany, they did develop comprehensive schools, and I am a product of a comprehensive school, so I was going in a comprehensive school until I did get my matura. But in some states, they had this development, and in the most of our states in Germany, children are segregated after the fourth grade in the school, and this is, compared to other European countries, very, very early. So having the special schools in this system, I think it's a different perspective to the system, because it's not something that only children with special needs are facing. Today we have to say that we have a Flickhalteppich. We have a very different situation all over our states. We're really missing standards, clear recommendations, concepts, because mainly in even in Baden-Württemberg, where I come from, the schools themselves develop models and concepts because there is no clear idea, no clear quality standard how inclusion should be developed in this system. On the one hand, to having this freedom to develop own concepts is probably at some places and some schools it's a good concept because people are much more involved into the development. But on the other hand, it depends on the willing to change systems. And as we all know, it's very difficult to change a system that is in his structure so deeply in a society like our educational system in Germany. And so it's sad that we, since the signing of the UN Convention, the amount of children who are schooled in segregated settings is growing in a comparison in Germany, and this is something we should think much more about it.
Well, in Iceland, we could say that we have been working towards inclusive education at least since 1974. Because at that time there was a big change in the school system, when we had new educational law that said that from that time we were not allowed to group students by their abilities, and that every student should have the right to go to school. So from that time, this is what we've been working towards. I feel like we have been having ups and downs with inclusive education, and we've been going circles, and sometimes, and maybe all people that when we grow older like I am now, we feel I've done this before. So I feel we are going in circles. But although we've been working towards inclusive education there, it was not until 2008 that we could find the concept inclusive education or inclusion in the law or the legislation. So that's when it was definitely by law schools should be inclusive. What has happened then, sometimes they just change the word, like Justin was just explaining, that they took out integration or whatever the word they had before and put in inclusive education, and the practice didn't change much. But in 2011, the national curriculum became even stronger than the law that schools in Iceland should be inclusive. And at that time, the policy in the national curriculum was based on six fundamental pillars. And they are the literacy. One of the pillars is the literacy, and the literacy in the widest sense. Education should be sustained for sustainability, for democracy and citizenship, for equality, creativity, and health. So right now, this is what we are aiming for, is to get the education in Iceland to build on all those six pillars. The national curriculum, first it was for all the school system, the main one, both the preschool, the compulsory school, and the secondary schools. And the next step was to take all the subject curriculum and write them up again, and taking care of those fundamental pillars. So that's where we are now. So right now, we are spending more time on trying to get those pillars into the system first and then into the practice. And I have the feeling that a similar thing is happening in Iceland as Sweden, that there is a little bit of layback with inclusive education, and people wondering if that is where we should go, or with the right of parents and students to choose the school they want to go to, or even the system they want to go to, there is a debate what is the best school system. And of course, it's difficult to say what is best, or is there anything like that. But at least right now, there is a debate about inclusive education, but hopefully, what will happen is that often when we go down the next step, there is only one way, and it's to go up again. And that has happened in Iceland with other things that I'm not going to mention here. But hopefully in the school system will go up. And when I talk about go up, I'm talking about inclusive education, because that's where I think we should be going. And I hope we will.
In Spain, I would like to stress the idea of the process too. We start the process of inclusion or integration 30 years ago, and it was in a very small scale, just few schools in primary and infant schools with relatively selected pupils, but with a clear idea that it is possible to do it, and we wanted to show other schools more reluctant to the idea that about inclusion or integration, that it was possible. So 30 years before, 80% of our pupils with special needs are in ordinary school. But now we are facing very, very important challenges in this process again. First of all, is the quality of the education that they are receiving. It's true that a big majority of those pupils are in ordinary school, but it's not true that all of them feel happy, as some of the kids that we have seen in the film say so clearly and so lovely. No, we are happy in this school because nobody is alone. And I'm not sure that the majority of our pupils in our school be so happy, and particularly in the secondary level, in the secondary compulsory education, which is the more reluctant to the big changes that is necessary to introduce in the school, gradually, but big changes. And important second challenge is that what happened with this another 20% of pupils with special needs is that the right to be included is exclude somebody, is not for all really, but if those children, although they we recognize that they have very complex and difficult needs or support needs, they don't have the right to be with their colleagues, with their mates, with their children, at the same group, in the same age, in the same school. It's a big challenge which reflects that in this moment we are always analyzing who decide where to be, and if, as I wanted to stress, this idea that what the right to be included is a right just for some, or really is a right for all.
I look to the inclusion or inclusive education, this is a part of inclusion, from social construction perspective. Always constructing something should be some kind of stimulus. So I think the stimulus was regaining independence in the 90s from Soviet regime, as you know. We lived for 50 years there. So, and together with democratization and humanization of society, it was a clear humanization and democratization of education system. So, and I would like to mention some issues related to inclusive education, but I don't know which one is most important. Always this question like about the egg and chicken, who or what was first. So, but it's clear that all together, like from systemic approach, so sustainable priorities and sustainable policy towards inclusion or inclusive education, and we are on the road and to the end, the kind of light. So it's interesting that changing governments and changing ministers of education, they are policy makers and they are politicians, you know, having different backgrounds and understanding. But it's interesting that, and it's beneficial that policy towards inclusive education remain for 20 years, more than 20 years now. And of course, very clear legal framework, law on education, concept of good enough school, what was recently developed, and educational strategies and action plans, they are in one line or corresponding each other. And of course, methodological changes, paradigm shift from diagnosis to special educational needs, to diversity, and from diagnosis and diagnostics of disabilities and disorders towards needs, to recognizing the need to be supported, and supported not only the child, but supported teacher who is working in the classroom, the diverse children. And of course, changes in practice, in a school, in pedagogical practice. And as I am a practitioner, I worked for many years, for more than 20 years in practice, but in the kindergarten, but anyway, in the practice. And now almost the same period I'm working at university as a researcher. So, and the first research was done about the teachers' attitudes on inclusive education. It was at that time on integration. This is kind of part of the road. And teachers said, we have no knowledge how to work with different children, with other children, they said, and we're not prepared for that. And now, one headmaster of the school said, every normal school should join diverse children. You know, it's clear the shift from we are not prepared, school is not adapted, to recognize that every normal school should be kind of, we are here, we are diverse. And teacher training and professional training, teacher training towards inclusive education, and in Lithuania at the moment, this is kind of general philosophy included into all teacher training programs, course on inclusive education, but we see this is not enough, of course. We see the challenging thing here that our professors and teacher trainers or educators are much behind than those who are preparing future teachers. So it's a lot to do in this way, but we are trying. Thank you.
Thank you all very much for very thought-provoking first statements. I think we've seen how the point I was also trying to make with the intertwined character of the history of the educational system, of policies, but also the importance of the process of whether that's teacher training or of change in educational systems. I think we should talk more about the divergent effects of something like the UN Convention. Kasten, you mentioned in your statement that actually you see that potentially this, what we usually think of as a very positive development in terms of the convention being ratified, could actually have a negative impact or a backlash against attempts to be more inclusive. And so I would be interested to know from in the different countries what impact the convention has had. I know that Iceland hasn't ratified the convention yet. Countries have had different relationships to or have been differently involved in the UN system and those kinds of human rights charters. So I'm wondering if we could maybe hear more about what steps are being taken to implement the convention, and also whether it's a positive development or a negative development.
In Spain, I think that they have the convention of the United Nations has had a very important role to empower association, organization of people with disabilities, because it's very important to say, to recognize that we are not talking anymore about a good principle, something which is nice, which would be nice that you will have the same opportunities. This is one way to say, and another way to say that you have the right, and even you have the right to be defended because in the law. Or in the court, sorry, and a lot of group or some important groups in Spain, in the movement of the disability association, are now going to the court to defend their rights. So this is introducing some kind of pressure in administration, both educational or other administration, in order to think about that we are not talking anymore about something that we can by themselves to reflect or to reinterpret. And now we have a very big body of knowledge and documents and recommendation by the United Nations Committee to say how to interpret this right to, for instance, to be included.
Okay, well, Sweden has ratified both these conventions, the Conventions of the Rights of the Child and the Convention of Rights of Persons with Disabilities. And the first one is not part of the legislation, but the second one is. So in the new School Act from 2011, this is compulsory. And this was a very big step, which means that headmasters and school administrators in our country have to stick to this, which means that it's not every child, independently of disability or whatever, race or gender, has the right, same right to education, accessibility to education. So this is a big demand, a big change in our country, and I will say that this is one of the good things which has happened during the last 5-10 years in our country, that we have kept to the UN conventions in the way we have done.
Thank you.
Yeah, the problem in the German-speaking countries was that the UN convention was mistranslated. And we can debate still if it was a strategy, an official one, or if it was a failure. And the mistranslation was, for example, in only one sentence, but there have been many in the transfer, was, for example, that the development of inclusive settings was translated into the right to be settled in a mainstreaming setting. And this is definitely not the same. And so, for example, in Germany, after the first edition of the German translation, even the colleagues from the special school said, this is what we're doing. We're giving the children the right to be placed in a mainstreaming setting. But the people, the parents themselves decide for the special schools. So it was a very difficult and weird debate in Germany, and we have to recognize that the German translation, the official German translation from Austria, Germany, and Swiss, is still not published on the official homepage of the UN. But we have now a new translation. It was translated by NGOs and a lot of organizations of people with disabilities. And even our Ministry for the Rights of People with Disabilities in Germany is not using the official translation on their homepage. But this led into a big debate. What is inclusion? So there was no concept of inclusion so far, and then we had this wrong translation. Now, 6 years later, after the signing, all the German states have to do the first reports to the monitoring committee that is in Berlin in the German Institute of Human Rights. And we just had a view on the feedback of the commission there to the report of whole Germany. And they recognize that cooperative classes, Außenklassen, how we call them in Germany, are not considered to be inclusive. And the feedback of the commission was these children in these classes are not to be accounted for children in inclusive settings. This is only one example. So I think the problem is if you don't want to understand what's behind it, there are many strategies to go away. So that's the problem. But still, I would say that now that we come to a closer understanding what really is meant by inclusive education, we still have to face that mainly it is only discussed in the case of disability in Germany. And this is also a bad impact of the UN Convention, because now if you talk about inclusion and if the word inclusion is used, people only think about children and pupils with disability, and they don't think about the others anymore. And so it's a big debate. If we have a conference in Ludwigsburg related with the title inclusion, It's almost only 80% of the people who are coming are parents from children with disabilities, are teachers from special schools, and we don't address the general schools, the other people who would have to be addressed. So it's also a bad impact of the UN Convention.
Can I add a little bit? Because in Iceland, there is no question that it has impacted the educational law, the legislation, and the national curriculum. So everything is telling us that's what we want and that's what we are aiming for. But then there is this opposite thing, this practice that we had and the debate about the financing, the money, because we have to... We have a certain amount of money that we can divide, and who's going to get it, and how are we going to divide it? And you could see it on one of Justin's overhead this tonight, that one way to do that is to diagnose children and get them labeled, and that means money. You get money, and you can see what's happening in Iceland. We're just putting labels on children. And I think that is very sad that we are moving towards that. And I don't know when we will get up so high that there is only one way and it's to go down again. But we are still moving upwards. But I hope we will go down the hill again. I don't want to stay up there like tonight. I felt so embarrassed.
Haftis, what about the UN Convention? Is there some sensitivity for its principles, or is there a reason why it hasn't been ratified? Is not necessary, or
no? It's in the regulation that we want inclusive education, and the schools are supposed to open their schools for all children. But then they go around it by saying, you know, the school just very close to here might have better facilities than we do. It's just, you're welcome here, but you know, for your child, it would be better to go to the next school. So it's in the law, and they should be doing that, but there are things like that. So it's a lot up to the school, how open they are and ready for inclusive education, what they do. So some are pushing away and others are opening up their school. And what happens then? It's some schools start to get more children with some kinds of difficulties, and other schools are kind of pushing them a little bit away. And that's what happens often when you can choose the school instead of the system that we used to have. It's about the neighborhood school. Mm-hmm. But this, when I talk like that, that's in the bigger towns. But in the smaller towns, there's only one school. Mm-hmm. So you can't, there's no way to choose.
Well, that's a real advantage then, of small size. Okay. Anything else? No.
We just checked the UN Convention's main principles and our legislation. And as you know, Lithuania ratified UN Convention in 2010. And what is interesting that the next year, 2011, the law on education came to the light. And we have one law on education, and special education and special educational needs, meeting of special educational needs, those issues are included into law on education. And for example, accessibility, right to choose for family, to choose a school for their children. And for example, educational support and a lot of, not a lot, but few main regulations after the law on education came to the light as well. So it's the nice implementation of main principles. It's quite evident.
One of the other things that we've been discussing in the project quite a bit is the importance of of curricular change and in different school subjects. And I think it would be important for us to, and I think we'll talk about this tomorrow in some of the groups, about how inclusive principles are being used in to change curriculums to help particular subjects become more inclusive in schooling. And I wondered if we could hear from anyone on the podium about some successful examples of where it might be possible to come up with a more inclusive education in terms of particular subjects.
I feel like this is starting to be a race. Who's the first one to push the button? I think I'm like the politicians in Iceland right now. Of course, I'm not going to answer your question, but I'm going to put forward the things that I would like to discuss, and that's inclusive pedagogy. I would like to see us talk about inclusive pedagogy, talk about what is that? Does it exist? Would we like to develop that? Is that something that we would like to see? So that was just the question or a thought for all of you to think about.
I agree with Hafiz, sorry. And I think that even is something for our own project. We have to maybe to think more in pedagogic, no? And big changes in the organization of the school and so on, and the, for instance, the way of relationship with families, this kind of things, more than subject, which is even something difficult to manage when we at the same time we are talking and being evaluated by big competences, the big examination. External and international examination are not by subjects, are by competences. So we think if we have to change a little bit up maybe our mind and think more in pedagogy.
Yeah.
This was already a debate between the coordinators of the project. That's why we have the slash around the school subjects and the definition of subjects. And I think we should also have the perspective that subjects in this meaning is that we, in all of our countries, we still have the teacher training programs related to subjects. And so we have to answer the question, if I have a student and I'm not a math teacher, but if I would be a professor at a university and I would have to teach teachers and being a good math teacher, and they would ask me, how do I do that? And they also have to have an answer, and not only from someone from educational science or from special education like my profession. They should also get an answer from their math professor. And so I agree in some ways, because I really believe there are pedagogical principles. For example, I was very long working with the Montessori school in Halle, an der Saale, and it was interesting, during that time, 20 years ago, nobody was talking about inclusion, but what they were doing was inclusion. And they didn't even need that word, and they were not talking about inclusive subjects. They were talking about the individual right of every child in the classroom to learn related to his needs, abilities, interests. That's how they were talking about teaching, and this is inclusion. And then they were finding ways to teach the language or to teach math, and much more related, as you probably know, in Montessori pedagogic, to a wider frame. It's not the kind of math teaching that I had to go through during my school time. It's a lot different, like Lernwerkstatt.
Learning workshop?
Like learning workshops, okay.
Well, you asked for successful examples. I can't give any successful examples from Sweden when it comes to this issue. We got a new national curriculum for the compulsory schools in 2011. And in that curriculum, subject, teaching subjects is focused much more than before. But at the same time, this goes together with earlier grading, more, we have six levels of when grading now, and also a system where you have more national tests. And this goes contrary to the strivings for inclusion, I will say. So we have to learn more there, and I think this project might help us to come to solutions which gives us more of evidence to work on this, because it's really a problem. It's not only about inclusive pedagogy. It's about how to deal with the more stressed focus on the subject itself and the disciplines. So that's a tricky one.
Yes, I think it is something that we've discussed a bit is the rise and fall of particular subjects and their importance. Yeah. And of course, if there's in a post-PISA world, there are certain competencies and certain foci that seem to have become much more important. And I think that part of what we need to think about in terms of diversity and inclusion is thinking about different types of intelligence, thinking about different subjects that one can excel at, one can also contribute to the life of the school and also to society. And so I think that that's something where we can see the negative impact of global phenomena like standardized tests or rankings and other phenomena. Well, we have time for some questions from the floor. If anyone is interested, Alain Adams and Michelle Brendel have microphones, so feel free to raise your hand if you're interested in posing a question to the group or to any individual about anything we've talked about or something that you... Ah, I see. Okay.
Is there any discussion when one talks about school inclusion, are there any discussions about the inclusion of transgender children or intersex children? I ask the question because these two are highly stigmatized groups, highly invisible, but when they are not highly bullied at school, and 30% make suicide attempts. And this all, of course, has an impact of school success.
Actually, that's why we choose different experts in the project with different backgrounds, because we have sociology with Justin and a colleague of Ludwigsburg. Her background is also working on gender issues or gender sensitive pedagogic, so we can't address all these diversity levels explicitly. That's not what we want to do, because we still believe in the individualization. But with the choosing of the experts and the project, we have tried to have colleagues who were working with migration, who were working with language or multi-language things like Justin and me, or with disability. So we have tried to fix a consortium that is representing some of the questions related to diversity.
Diejenigen, die wollen, können ihre Fragen auch auf Deutsch stellen, ne, wenn es Englisch zu schwierig ist.
I'll do it in English, though. I'm a mother of a visually impaired child who goes to a school that I'm not going to name here, from various reasons, and I would like to know about the experience in Luxembourg, because we really haven't heard anything about this.
Alain?
About visual impairment. Yes, you didn't. Yeah, the policy in inclusion. In fact, you didn't hear a lot about it, but you heard it. It's it's nearly the same. There are, how should I say it? There is a lot of people. There are a lot of people that are that should be interested in the subject, that close their ears and that are glad not to hear, not to discuss the challenge of the convention. And this is what we are trying to do with this conference, with the World Cafe, with our project, with the study we are presenting tomorrow, to make it a subject in Luxembourg. What should I say else? Kerstin can perhaps say something about the study she made.
Yes, actually we are presenting this survey tomorrow. It was a little contract and not a very big budget that we had for the survey, but our focus was mainly on the question, what experiences have teachers, parents, and students in schools where already children with diverse special needs are learning together with others. And that we worked out some recommendations for the inclusive development, and our survey was related to the action plan in Luxembourg. It was already mentioned in the action plan that the experiences of some schools should be evaluated and documented. But we will have this presentation tomorrow. One thing that I would say is that one deficit that we were finding was that there is a big gap in the information politics. A lot of parents, teachers, and also school pupils have no informations about what is possible, what do we understand under inclusion, what kind of assisting systems do we have. So one recommendation was to work on an infrastructure for the policy towards inclusion. And one thing that we, a positive outcome, was we had 200, we were asking 260 teachers who are already working in situations that you could call mainstreaming, cooperative, or inclusive situations. And we found that the attitudes of teachers are predominantly very positive, and the same with the children. We did some group discussions, and also the children, the pupils themselves, reported very positive experiences with the recognized diversity. They are not always recognizing our picture of diversity, they recognize others, but so there are already some very positive experiences. But we would like to invite you to come tomorrow so you can see the whole survey and the whole recommendations, and it's going to be published so you can take it with you and read it at home.
Further questions or comments? Well, I would maybe then give the podium participants one last chance to say what they think is the most important facilitator of inclusive education in their country. Because I think what my vision for tomorrow is to not only hear about the very important study that Kerstin and Peter Hullmeier have done, but also to really think hard about what is the most important way forward for inclusive education. And if you could only take one, would it be an ideology or a value? Would it be a practice? Would it be a structural change, a cultural change? What is, we've talked a lot about the the convention as a charter, as a human rights device, which can have legal implications. But as we know from the case of Luxembourg, just having ratified the convention does not, in and of itself, solve a lot of problems. So what still remains for us as researchers on inclusive education is then how can we facilitate this, whether or not the convention is working to our advantage or not. So, Stefania?
I would like to stress on collaboration and cooperation as a facilitator. As we did international research on teachers' roles and attitudes and sentiments on inclusive education, so we see that in Lithuania, the predictor to inclusive education is collaboration. So, and collaboration among actors, policymakers, researchers, teacher trainers, teachers, practitioners, and parents and children. As well, collaboration between fields, for example, those who are working in inclusive education and non-inclusive education, and special educators. So it should be not kind of cooperation and collaboration instead of competition, because this is one way. And special educators sometimes can be like resources for those teachers who need support sometimes. So we see that cooperation and collaboration, it means this is kind of facilitator allowing us to overcome a lot of barriers.
Thank you. I think that's a very, very important point. In Luxembourg, we have the Équipe Multiprofessionnelle, and they are ambulatory services that go into general schools to provide support services. And this issue of collaboration and cooperation has been a key question in seeing how effective they can be. And thank you for that.
I was faster.
I told you.
You told me. Yes, I did.
Okay. I would say the biggest facilitator is having pictures of what we would like to develop together. And so a movie like this, where you see the children talking so differently about diversity that we would probably do it, or going to a school that already have experiences and doing it and seeing how that works, this really can change opinions about your own attitude towards it. And so I would definitely think we would have to have more open and public publications on a level like what we are working on, DVDs and pictures, and not only texts or evidence-based research. We really need pictures. We need to address the heart and not only the cognitive mind to change things.
Thank you.
I think we got to try to understand that education is a very, or perhaps the most important part of society. And development in society. And if we do that, and policymakers understand that, which they probably do, we understand also that to try to meet the challenges in society with climate change, for example, and lacking resources, we got to have that in mind. So the pictures you talk about, Kerstin, I agree, that's very important. And like Stefania also said, policymakers, researchers, and practitioners have to work together to try to find solutions how to develop education systems and practices in schools in that direction. Otherwise, we have no choice any longer, and things get lost which we have gained before. So I think that is a big challenge.
Okay, thank you.
To me, the teacher is the biggest player in inclusive education. I think we cannot make this happen without the teacher. So I think we need, I don't only think, I believe we need strong professionals that know their identities and know what they know and know that they are the ones who have to implement this. But at the same time I say that we need strong professionals, that we should be aware that we should never leave them alone to do this. We need collaboration. We need to work on this all together. But without strong teachers that believe in themselves and know that they are the professionals, they are the experts, this will not happen. So please, all the teachers here, I believe in you. Be strong and understand that you are the experts. You are the ones who can do this. But we will support you.
I would like to do a comment in the sense that when you recognize a right for somebody, at the end you recognize that this right for everybody. So now we are talking about the right of the children with a special need, with disabilities. But once we have recognized that, why we can select just for them? Every child has the right to have a very good education, and not only those more vulnerable groups, immigrants or socioeconomic difficult background and so on. At the end, every child will have the right and will demand, her and their family will demand the right to have a very quality education. So people with disability are giving us a very good present. It's the opportunity to rethink all the process, all the education in which we live.
I'm sorry for the second round, but I would like to add something about the, just like a comment to Gerardo raised issue. So why we're talking about collaboration? It's a possibility to share our interpretations and understanding. For some time I'm working in Uzbekistan. Can I share one sentence from this experience? I entered the country. I saw a lot of signs which I recognize from Soviet times. But they are talking about, we are supporting them to develop a system of inclusive education. And they are talking a lot of children's rights. And then I saw their documents, and then I saw the practice. It's just different fields. But they are talking about children's rights. And at the same time, they're having a list of disabilities or stages which prevent children to enter the school, or school not allowed it to accept the child. And I asked, and what about children's rights? And they said, but if you're ill, your right is stay at home. So be careful about different understandings of very nice concept.
So thank you so much. I think that's a very good statement to end on, because tomorrow the idea is to engage in communication across cultural and linguistic boundaries and to learn from each other. And we will say more about the method of World Cafe tomorrow morning. But just to give you some hints on this. So we will have, the tables will be in this room, several tables, and then out in the hall and other rooms. And you're free to move between these themes and the different groups as you wish. We will try to, we'll have a list of all the research questions and the themes tomorrow. And The language that is chosen will depend on the participants, so you'll have to engage a bit in cooperation and negotiation there and help each other to try to understand what's being said. Okay, so thanks again for coming this evening to this beginning of our conference, and we look forward to seeing you tomorrow.